Howdy, and welcome to Thin Air, news with an altitude from the small town Rockies and Four Corners. I'm John Kovash.
I'm Gina Garacio. Howdy. This month we track artifact looters in Crow Canyon.
There is a thriving trade in antiquities.
From Moab, we look at the granddaddy of tailings piles on the Colorado River.
The levels of contamination in the groundwater are sort of unprecedented.
In Durango, a student wonders why none of her classmates care about the election.
You know, they're out complaining and whining and not doing anything about it.
And in Nederland, we hear about an unusual contest. The state of Utah is pushing for new railroad lines into northwest Colorado, and some Meeker area ranchers have expressed opposition. Utah's Community and Economic Development Department and UDOT favor a new rail line connecting Vernal, Utah and Rifle, Colorado. They say rail would open up the area to the mining of phosphate and bauxite and would create 2,000 new jobs. Utah officials say the new lines would carry 12 million tons of freight each year and would facilitate Colorado's effort to reopen the Tennessee Pass rail line between Dotsero and Pueblo.
In Taos, famed earthship builder Michael Reynolds has given up his contractor and architect licenses after several clients filed complaints. Reynolds built many earthships under homeowner permits, which has led to issues of risk and responsibility. New Mexico officials say they weren't advised when home builders chose to violate building codes. Reynolds says the codes are like going through a dense thicket with a set of antlers. In Santa Fe, county officials have shut down a gravel mine that was being operated by the nonprofit Ghost Ranch Conference Center. The gravel is going to state highway projects. The Ghost Ranch is countersuing, saying its gravel operation has been grandfathered since the 1960s. In Aspen, Pitkin County Commissioner Mick Ireland is in hot water. After voting for a building moratorium, it was revealed he maintained a list of local developers on his computer that he considered liars and greedheads. Now Ireland is being forced to turn over all his email correspondence. First, Ireland's personal messages will be separated at a cost to the county of $3,000.
With gasoline prices expected to be half a buck higher, Park City is just one resort town expecting a slow summer. Park City gets 60-70% of its summer visitors by auto. The Chamber of Commerce is budgeting conservatively and expecting more of its guests to be comprised of nearby Wasatch Range residents. Utah saw gas prices jump 18 cents in just 1 month. In Albuquerque, the University of New Mexico is crafting its first ever campus policy on freedom of expression. The school's executive cabinet wants to require all speeches or demonstrations to be scheduled 24 hours in advance. Some students say that's a stifling of free speech.
The town of Parachute is cracking down on unsightly businesses. Letters went out to a welding shop, a lube shop, and an apartment building that town neatness laws are being violated. According to Parachute Mayor Pro Tem Dave Beasley, you drive down I-70 and look at our town. It's not a pretty sight. Even the small ski area expansions are becoming controversial in Colorado. At Leadville, plans for expanding the county-owned Ski Cooper are running into opposition from green groups. The county wants to trade the 1,100-acre Hollenbeck Ranch for land at the ski base that would see 500 trophy homes constructed. At Midway City, Utah, environmentalists and state agencies are expressing concerns over plans for an $80 million resort, the Springs at St. Moritz. The resort would feature hundreds of hotel rooms and condos, plus commercial space. Most controversial are plans for a 6-foot fence around the resort that would impede wildlife migration.
Local officials are becoming more skeptical about proposed development projects that rely on agricultural water rights. Those rights must be converted into commercial water rights in water court, a process that often attracts opposition from other local water players, leading to years of litigation. Such was the case in Salida last month, where officials declined to give a 6-month approval to the Monarch Shadows Resort proposed at Maysville. Also, at Telluride last month, county officials voted no to a new golf course that relied on unconverted agricultural water rights. At Somerset, the West Elk coal mine is still evacuated. Remote cameras show a smoky haze in previously mined areas. Workers are trying to seal off the active mine from carbon monoxide.
In Durango, 15 buildings were struck by a graffiti painter in a single evening, including a Pizza Hut, an animal hospital, and the fire department. By Durango law, the building owners must cover the cost of removing the graffiti. And Durango animal activist Terry Smith has been charged with cruelty to animals. Smith is the president of Doghouse Thrift World in Durango. Witnesses say they saw her beat her dog after a traffic incident. Smith says it was only a spanking. Last fall, Smith spent 4 days in jail for cited violations of the Durango leash law.
In Glenwood Springs, Garfield County Social Services is close to meeting its target of collecting $3 million a year from deadbeat parents. Last year, the county collected child support that was due in more than 1,000 cases, claiming a 68% success rate. In the next 5 years, Colorado wants all counties to reach an 80% success rate. In Leadville, locals have been packing public hearings to argue over the use of snowmobiles on city streets and on Mineral Belt Trail, which was supposed to be for non-motorized use. Locals complain that juveniles are speeding through the streets day and night, endangering pedestrians and contributing noise and fumes. After another hearing in April, town officials will decide whether to pass new restrictions on snowmobiles. The presidential election campaign has been unavoidable in the news media, but back in February, there was scant interest in the presidential primary in Colorado. We talked to San Miguel County Clerk Gay Kappas and some Telluride voters and non-voters.
We've had 42 applications for to vote early or absentee, and 41 of them are back in. There's one Democratic ballot out. There's more Republicans. We've had 23 Republicans vote, and there's been 18 Democrats vote, and one still out, making your total of 42. So we've had more requests for Republicans, which is unusual. Democrat is usually stronger in San Miguel County.
Yeah, I am planning to vote.
For whom?
For Al Gore.
And
oh, you think you're asking me if I'm going to be maybe a crossover to McCain? You know, nah, I don't think so. I think I'm just going to vote for Gore and be done with it.
Are you voting in the presidential primary?
No, I'm not.
I'm still cogitating on it. I'm procrastinating.
Are you voting in the presidential primary?
No.
How come?
Because I don't care.
Are you voting in the presidential primaries?
I'm not either.
No.
I don't even know why.
Not registered.
It's just a machine. It runs on its own, and we, you know, the people that are elected are just puppets.
Bill Bradley. I've read some of his books, some of the excerpts from his books, and the gentleman, he's a man of character. He's made some good decisions.
The reason I'm not voting for George Bush is because he's associated with the Pope and the New World Order. And
Al Gore sounds
And I'd vote for Ralph Nader if I thought he was going to win. Bill Bradley probably won't win either, but, you know. That's American politics for you.
Kinda, I guess, Al Gore.
Go with the natural law candidate.
He's an environmentalist, and he is not wanting to go harsher on the war on drugs, spending all of our money.
I think some people are tired of politics, and there's some here that's not quite as political as some others. And I'd like to see them all get it together.
The presidential election has been unavoidable in the news media, but some observers see a clear lack of involvement among 18 to 30-year-olds. Rebecca Hines reports from Fort Lewis College in Durango.
Fort Lewis College political science professor Ed Angus cited two reasons for why students, specifically in this age bracket, haven't been involved.
People may not care, some of those kind of things, but people in that generation have watched historically a lot of television. What you see in the evening news, particularly if you've been exposed to that for 16 or so years, tends to be pretty negative. I mean, the media does not cover good news. What do you see? Scandal, corruption. And so I think that's had a deadening kind of impact in terms of young people saying, well, why should I get involved in that? why do I care? A lot of people in that age group are away at college. We don't make it easy for people to register, first of all, or to acquire absentee ballots. Places where there are lots of college students, like Durango, don't necessarily make it easy for students to participate.
Another reason cited in a debate on this topic by President of the New American Foundation, Ted Halstead, is that this generation is suffering from economic downward mobility, which is deadening faith in the system. They are making 30% less than their parents did, largely due to the stock market helping the rich get richer. Angus speculated about what the main issue for students would be if there was one.
The issue today would probably be sort of environmental issues, and they don't work very closely together. So I think that there's not a unity.
Another possible reason for uninvolvement by students specifically are administrative problems.
There's been some amount of disinformation given, I understand, in previous years by the local county clerk's office in terms of students change their registration to here, they lose financial aid, some of those kind of things.
Youth Vote 2000 is a national organization which has a branch in Denver. Student fees from participating colleges like Fort Lewis help fund their movement, which is to get students registered, educated, and to the polls. Denver Executive Director Jane Duncan cited one of the issues they are trying to overcome.
Generally feel disconnected from the political process and also feel that their vote doesn't count. If you look at, I mean, the polls nationwide, we've had lower and lower and lower voter turnout because people just feel that it doesn't make a difference. That's something that we're trying to change. We're trying to promote young people getting involved and trying to show our lawmakers and policymakers that the youth in America are a valid constituency and that they need to be listened to and that they do have good ideas.
As Duncan points out, they have truly been making headway.
Actually, we did Youth Vote 98 in the 1998 campaign, especially for the gubernatorial race here in Colorado, and we registered over 13,000 students from across the state of Colorado, and through that we had a 10% increase in those that actually did go out and vote, registered voters in our age bracket, so young people looking at ages 18 through 24.
FLC senior Chris Holmes shared his reasons for voting.
Yeah, the majority of the people, you notice, you know, they're out complaining and whining and not doing anything about it, but there are those that do, and voting is the place to start.
Duncan cited yet another layer of the problem.
But what was really rewarding for us last year is watching the excitement build on the campuses in general. Students who had not taken an active role in the political process in general really wanting to get out there and learn and asking and seeking information. When I initially got involved in this campaign in 1998, I was thinking that, again, I had the general view as everybody else did, that they just didn't care, they didn't want to get involved, and that wasn't it at all. In fact, they were seeking us out.
This age bracket hasn't been using the privilege that many are dying for today in other countries. We'll see what happens in November. Reporting for Thin Air, this is Rebecca Hines.
For the past decade, Moab residents have faced the uncertainty of how the giant Atlas uranium site will be reclaimed along the Colorado River. This month, Rory Tyler talks to Bill Heaton, who first faced the issue as a county commissioner and now as Utah Conservation Director for the Grand Canyon Trust.
Now it appears that Heaton's efforts and the efforts of many other individuals and organizations are coming to fruition, and that there's a very good chance that the Atlas tailings pile will be moved away from the river in the near future. Here to talk about these developments is Bill Heaton. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Rory. How are you?
Good. Bill, can you describe the tailings pile itself and its ecological impact on the Colorado River?
The tailings pile is a 10.5 million ton pile that covers about 130 acres and sits in the floodplain of the river north of Moab. It is, during its 44-year lifetime, has been leaking an average of 57,000 gallons a day of highly contaminated liquid into the groundwater and thence into the Colorado River. The levels of contamination in the groundwater are sort of unprecedented at a riverside uranium tailings pile, and it's the largest tailings pile ever built in the drainage of the Colorado River or any of its tributaries. It's been found to be jeopardizing the existence of the endangered fish in the river because of the tremendous levels of ammonia that are leaking out into the river.
Is there a human threat here?
Well, the river water in the Colorado is drunk by more than 20 million Americans living downstream. And the tailings pile has often filled the Moab Valley with radon gas during winter inversion.
Bill, why has it taken so long for the various private and governmental entities to take action on moving the pile away from the river?
The Atlas pile was under the purview of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the NRC is only supposed to regulate the cleanup of tailings piles, but those cleanups are supposed to be paid for by the actual companies that own the tailings pile. And Atlas was in a very fragile financial situation. They had threatened NRC that if they had to do a big cleanup, they would go bankrupt. The agency was trying to keep Atlas alive and design a plan that would fit within their budget, and yet that was patently impossible, and it resulted in a tremendous delay until ultimately Atlas went bankrupt a couple of years ago. The fact of that bankruptcy has opened the door now to the possible cleanup of this tailings pile.
Now the door is open. What's the current status of the effort to move the tailings pile?
The collaboration of the people locally who've worked on this and finally succeeded in awakening all the downstream users resulted in this issue being taken up by the Department of Energy. And Secretary Richardson has come to Moab early this year and announced that the Department of Energy and the administration are throwing their full weight behind an effort to transfer jurisdiction from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to the Department of Energy, where there is money and expertise and experience in moving these tailings piles away from the river. DOE has moved 9 of them away from the Colorado River and its tributaries, and they are preparing legislation right now that will accomplish that and get an authorization for the full funding to move the tailings to a geophysically ideal site that we have identified 18 miles north of the current location.
So call your congressman.
Call your congressman and your senator.
All right. I've been talking to Bill Hedden. He is the Utah Conservation Director of the Grand Canyon Trust. And we were discussing the Atlas Mill Tailings Pile on the banks of the Colorado River in Moab, Utah. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Larry.
Politicians in Washington are still at odds over how to protect archaeological resources in the Southwest, but there are ways you can help in the meantime. Connie Gotch reports from Crow Canyon.
Hundreds of years ago, artists living in northern New Mexico carved petroglyphs, images of animals, people, and natural elements into rock faces. Most of us look and ponder respectfully, but others deface them or loot the areas for artifacts. That worries archaeologists like Terry Paul. Today she's driving around Crow Canyon at the edge of San Juan County, New Mexico, to check the Dinata, where ancestral Navajos made their home.
There is a thriving trade in antiquities, private collectors primarily, looting, digging up artifacts on federal and state land is against the law.
Native Americans lose a valuable part of their past when people loot sites. So do all of us, in fact.
Because for the scientific record, it's important that the provenience, the location of the artifact, is kept pristine. Because if it's been moved to another place, we're moving a piece of the puzzle, and we may not be able to read what the archaeological record is trying to tell us if we haven't got it in the place that it was left by the people who left it there.
A few rangers try to police the Dinata, but its size makes catching looters hard. Therefore, Terry Paul is developing the New Mexico Site Stewards Program in cooperation with the Solomon Ruins Museum in Bloomfield.
To bring local citizens into it and get involved in taking care of these sites, kind of becoming their guardian angels, as it were.
Paul steers her truck along a sandy one-lane track filled with sagebrush and rocks. She stops in an especially rugged place. In the stubble of last year's tall grass, she finds a faint trail, and reaching an ancient stone wall, points out a boulder. An artist carved a vibrant sun and a symbol of the four directions on it, and yes, a jerk cut graffiti into it.
You see that? There's a little man's head that's been scratched in, probably with somebody's car keys. And
This is the kind of thing that we really hope to discourage by having a citizen's presence out here on a regular basis.
Terry Paul climbs across boulders bigger than she is and jumps into another grassy area. Now, animated stick figures hold hands and joyfully skip. Whoever depicted them needed others, needed community.
Now, we also have some writing, looks like in Spanish. This area was also used by Spanish or Hispanic sheep herders, historically. I would hope that it would increase appreciation for the diversity of cultures we have here now, as well as in the past.
If a site steward notices deterioration while he or she is walking around, he or she can alert rangers to come and patrol the place more often.
Safety is our first consideration. And if the volunteer site stewards might be out patrolling and they did come across someone who was up to some funny business, they would not be advised to confront them. They should get license plate numbers, notice how many people are there, whether or not they're armed, what they're doing, and as carefully as possible, back away and call the authorities.
Several states already have successful site steward programs. Terry Paul expects New Mexico's to have many volunteers. Once they sign up, she'll match them to a site that needs watching, teach them basic safety in the backcountry, and send them off to do their job.
Human beings have always needed to have a connection to their past. We all came from cultures that live very closely to the earth. And maybe if we could remember some of that heritage, if we could get a feel for it, we might feel more inclined to protect what we have now.
Terry Paul, project director of the New Mexico Site Stewards Program in cooperation with the Solomon Ruins Museum in Bloomfield, New Mexico. She's developing the program to help preserve New Mexico's cultural resources of the past so we can enjoy them in the present.
You're listening to Thin Air.
While your odds of winning the lottery are tiny, there is a contest that might be at least more fun. Anne Beauvais reports from Nederland.
To most people in the town of Nederland, local Scott Chapel is known simply as Lucky. Chapel is about to pass on some of his luck to others. Starting April 16th, Chapel encourages people from across the country to have a little faith in a hidden dream and enter his contest. The prize? Lucky's Music Emporium, a shop Chapel and his wife Kathy have owned for the last couple years in downtown Nederland, Colorado. For a $100 entry fee and an essay of 100 words or less on why dreams can come true, one lucky person will win the store and everything inside of it.
There's the toy box. If you're under 18, you need to turn your radio off now. But this is where we sell locally made, hand-blown glass items and novelty smoking accessories. And that's kind of a neat place if you ever check it out. It's all black lights and it's very, very throwback. And then there's How Bazaar, which is like the marketplace. This is where we carry African percussion, baskets, and art. And we have jams here on Friday nights, and people bring their guitars, and we jam on the – we call it Space Jam. The body of this is made from an oil can, and the Africans use a lot of waste in musical instruments, which is interesting, being this is a traditional African instrument using modern trash for the instruments. This is from Ghana, and this is woven traditionally, but filled with bottle caps. And that's what that's all about.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. It's like yarn.
That's another cool noise.
What is that?
Just a net that I made. I used to have it on my apartment, and it was on the back porch, and when the wind would blow, it would make it just a nice wind chime.
Besides the inventory, Chapel is also giving up the decorations inside the store, some of which are very personal.
This big mural up here, which is on a drop part of the wall from the ceiling, I designed that, though I did not paint it. So it's the great unfinished work. And I just imagine the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland with the hookah blowing bubbles. And inside the bubbles are all rock and rollers that have passed away and are no longer with us. But we like to
think that they're still floating around there somewhere. And it's got a definite dead feel to it. You know, there's little bears and, you know, stuff like that. And the Cheshire Cat. And that's what that's about. The poster collection, which does go with the prize, is actually very good. This Jim Morrison over here was printed in London. That's a pretty rare poster. My wall poster from the Roger Waters show in Berlin. That's a pretty cool poster. This Jimi Hendrix over here is also a collector's item. Some of these dead posters. If anybody remembers on tour when they were giving out the postcards that all fit together like a poster, I've got that poster. And
the store and the chapels embody the spirit of Nederlin. With a population of 3,000, Nederlin is a place where people learn not only to enjoy each other's company, but also to appreciate the uniqueness of a given personality. Chapel says the winner will win more than just a store. That person will win a way of life.
The whole package of Nederlin is really the prize. It's a lot like Northern Exposure up here. I mean, we're all eccentric up here. That's why we're here. When you get 8,000 feet high, it definitely affects your outlook on things. And that's what I want people to know, is that they can escape the city. They can escape the suburbs. They can escape where you look and your neighbor is right there. You can escape the commute. You can escape the boss. That's what this is for $100. You've got a chance to do that. And even if you don't win, at least you got to think about it for a little while, and spiritually that is very good for you.
Following the Northern Exposure theme, Chapel also wants people to realize that the store is not run solely for profit and is not a way to get rich quick. The Chapels created the store more for the comfort of the customers and as a way to benefit the community.
Like a Floyd's Barbershop type of thing, only for hippies. And everybody hangs out. I mean, in the morning time, we get a whole bunch of guys that come and hang out. I got the bleacher seats out front, and we watch Nettervision, you know. That's like watching the show out here. And if you stick around here, there's a lot of characters in this town. So it makes for interesting watching.
To make sure the contest is fair and legitimate, the Chapels have decided to pay hundreds of different people from all over the area 25 cents an essay to judge and score the entries. But even though they want to remain impartial, Mrs. Chapel hopes the winner can continue grooving with the store's vibe.
There is an energy in here, and everybody that comes in always tells us about this energy. And it's a good energy, and we'd like to be able to pass that on so that somebody else can realize the same.
Evolve it from there. Yeah.
The contest will run from April 16th through October 31st. For more information on the contest, visit Chapel's website at luckysmusic.com or call 303-258-9120. In Nederlin, reporting for Thin Air, I'm Anne Beauvais.
Thanks once again for listening. Thin Air is a project of the High Country Community Radio Coalition, which includes public stations in Alamosa, Aspen, Boulder, Carbondale, Crested Butte, Durango, Grand Junction, Moab, Paonia, Salt Lake City, and Telluride.
Funding for Thin Air comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and your local station. This month, we track artifact looters in Crow Canyon.
There is a thriving trade in antiquities.
From Moab, we look at the granddaddy of tailings piles.
The levels of contamination in the groundwater are sort of unprecedented.
In Durango, a student wonders why none of her classmates care about the election.
They're out complaining and whining and not doing anything about it.